Blog Talk Radio.
Again, and I'm sure we're going to have a lovely show today.
for some of the listeners in the UK, what might know a little bit about you, but some may not, just give us a brief outline about yourself.
Okay, Bob, and listeners that are out there. Most of my life, I've been a teacher in the States, moved to about 5 different states, taught in Ohio, New Mexico, Arizona, the high desert of California, Southern California, and now here on Grand Cayman, I'm pretty much a retired teacher. I've been a children's reading specialist for about the past 20 years, and as soon as we came to the island, I decided to retire pretty much and spend, because this is such a great place for inspiration. I began my writing career in 2009 when we came to the island. And pretty much that's, you know, I still do some services for the schools here and now and then, but pretty much I'm home focusing on my writing career.
Where do you get your inspiration for writing your material for your books?
Well, Bob, most of my inspiration, you know, as a teacher, I taught a lot of reading, a lot of writing lessons, and I used to tell the students, you have base knowledge, write what you know, because you can start at a base and write what you know, and then you can twist it and expand it. So a lot of my writing comes from my past experiences. It comes from places that I have visited for inspiration. And like I said, past experiences. I've had quite a lot of interesting experiences throughout my whole life, and I base my stories on those. Of course, because it's fiction, you know, I can manipulate the story as most fiction authors do and embellish it and make it exciting. So that's pretty well where I get my inspiration from.
It sounds so easy, but I don't know if I could write a book. I don't know. Because I presume you start writing, but how do you start your first, your first line? Do you put, or as early as so-and-so, so-and-so? I don't know. You know, when you first start off writing, how do you plan that first few sentences?
Well, you know, Bob, it's great that you asked, and you probably could. You would probably be a great writer. You'd probably be amazed once you started the things that would flow. Every writer has their own techniques. And some people, you know, are they called plotters and planners, and I myself am very structured and very organized, and what I do first is I write a couple plots out down on paper. And then I do research. Okay, like my story is going to happen in Albuquerque. Well, I've lived there for 5 years, but I still need to do research. So you've got your plot, you've got your research, you've got your outline, you do a character sketch. Who are your characters? What do they look like? What are their personalities? Geographical location. You need a map for streets. I mean, there's a whole lot that goes into it. But there are some people that are highly gifted. They can sit down and bada boom, bada bing, they're just writing with wild abandon.
Yeah, when you talk to people like yourself and you get talking about writing, I suppose once you've done one book or two books, I suppose you get a thrill when you start writing and you think, well, this is going quite well, this is. Or do you get a block when you've just got to think, right, I'll have a rest today and then I'll write when I feel like it, or do you plan your every day?
You know, Bob, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, I do get writer's block, and I know people say there's no such thing, but it is for me. I do get blocks, and when I get blocks, I read more material, and that helps me. And once I'm out of the block, I'm like a freight train. I'm just, boom, full speed ahead.
It's strange that a good friend of mine who lives in Briglington, he used to write Jack the Ripper books.
Oh, okay.
And he says his last book, he had problems writing it because I think it took him 3 years on and off. And he said, some days I could write and write for ages, all day and all night. And then other times he said, I couldn't just write anything. Couldn't write a thing. He said, I just had to just do other things. And then all of a sudden it just comes back to me and I get on again. And I went for a coffee with him. I went for a sauna with him about a month ago. And I said, how are you doing? Are you writing any more? He said, no, packed in at the moment. I went, oh. So I don't ask him now. If he wants to tell me anything, like I'm going to write another book, because he's on about doing something entirely different from Ripper books, because he's wrote about four novels now. And, somebody's wrote a novel about Jack the Ripper recently and said he knows who did it. So I think everybody, well, I said to him, does everybody stop writing about Ripper? And no, they carry on. Until it all comes out, you just carry on writing what you think about who the suspect is. So, I never ask him again now. I just let him get on with it. But, going back to your writing, and what's one of your favorite works so far and why?
You know, I have to say it's probably the most recent book that I published, which is called The Good Teacher, The Women of the Willowwood, Book 1, because it's going to launch a series. Now, I have never done a series before. I did a book a while back, and I did a sequel, but this book, The Good Teacher, will launch a series for the Women of the Willowwood, and I'm really passionate about this one.
Right. It sounds very interesting. So is it going to be a book of 1, 2, or 3, or 4? Is it just going to follow on from every book?
Correct, Bob. I'm looking at, looking at future goals, possibly 3 to 4, and no more than 4. Well, it'll probably, books 1 through 4.
Right. Seems so interesting. I've read a little bit about it and everything. What is the central theme that runs through the story?
Okay, it has a lot of what the general plot is. It's an occult thriller, and we have a girl, a young woman, who is a victim of child abuse when she was small. And a lot of people ask me, I've had so many people say, are you a victim yourself? I am not, and I want to make that clear. I am not a victim of child abuse. As a teacher, I have seen a lot of it, and I have dealt with a lot of it. I have a heavy heart, Bob, for this. So, I wrote this into the book, but Daniela Reyes is a first-year teacher, young first-year teacher, going into the classroom here in New Mexico, gets a job. And what happens? She's got two to three children in her classroom that are abuse victims in her classroom. And she breaks down. She has, stress levels. She's got post-traumatic stress disorder that comes to her. And because she's caring for these children so much, and she's also an empath, and we're going to talk later in the show about empaths.
Yes.
Because she's so highly empathic, she begins to get ill, and it affects her health. So she seeks help, Bob. And the help that she seeks is deceiving. She meets with deception. And she comes in contact with a underground cult, which she thinks is going to help her. And most of the women are good, but there's one woman who just puts her on the wrong path, and her illness takes a turn for the worse. She becomes sick, so she has to go to a healer. And in New Mexico, it's called a curandera, and it's kind of like a shaman, someone that does shamanistic practices.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I'm sure you've heard it. So she goes to see this shaman, and the shaman says, look, your abilities here are off the charts. You are highly sensitive, you're an intuitive. If you want to help these children, come to this cult, and then we've got to do these spells. Well, she wants to help these children. So this cult talks her into doing spells that will help, because both the children are have abuse from drug abuse. One child is beaten in the home. So she's desperate to help these children. So she goes along with it, and she gets involved sometimes with the wrong kind of magic. So what she's got to do is she's got to find a way out. She's got to also, she learns that she's got to her father who passed over years ago. His soul is not at rest because of all the battering that she took as a child from him. So she learns that she has to become a soul rescuer. And she's got to do these spells with this so-called, good witch, and she's got to rescue her father's soul. The magic goes bad, and she deals with the effects of that. And like I said, it takes a toll on her. She's got a love life going, and her boyfriend Luke in the story can't deal with all this. He's like, "Oh, okay, the romance is over. You're weird. You've got to go." So she loses his relationship. She comes to a school where she's battling with I'm not going to spill the beans here, but she's battling with so-called, what we'll call a principal from hell. He's got it out for her. He wants to see her fired. He just has a thing for her. So she's battling quite a lot of evils in the story, Bob.
It sounds like it as well. I know when you was growing up, you used to watch spooky horror films and things like that. I'm one of these that I find it odd. Sometimes I can watch them, and other times I don't know if I get frightened or not. I used to turn my head away, and I used to think, well, why do I do that? But now it doesn't bother me at all. Anything, if I'm doing it on a paranormal case somewhere and we're finding things, and I find it very interesting now, more than anything else.
Yes, it is, And like I said, I loved it as a child. I used to watch it, and then I would have nightmares at night. And my mother would say, well, why are you watching that? Well, I can't help myself. I love it. I guess that's why I write it, Bob.
Yes, but you thoroughly enjoy writing it as well, don't you?
Oh, I love it. But, getting back to the story, and again, I'm, because it's such a touchy subject, I'm going to touch on it lightly. Talking about abused children, I had a very, very, very severe case of a child in New Mexico. And I'm going to say it this way, the child disappeared, okay? And I think we talked a little bit about this last time, that there are underground groups that do rescue for children. And I wasn't told a whole lot, because this student was, this was a student of mine. I wasn't told a whole lot of what happened to the student, other than the fact that they moved. I didn't know where they were. And 2 days later, every sign, every record, every documentation, every data piece disappeared, as this child also did. And I came to find out later, I knew exactly where this child went, and I swore to secrecy. But there is a group, and I'm allowed to talk about this because it is well known. They're called Children of the Underground. Have you ever heard of them, Bob?
Yes, I have. And okay. I suppose it's good that, people do survive there and everything like that. Yeah, you can explain more to the listeners.
And maybe some of the listeners are out there too. Well, it was a group that was formed, I believe, in the 1990s by a woman. And from what I take it, that this, this group is funded by women. It's a very powerful group. And I think it was Faye Yeager who started the group. And this group will take a mother and an abused child, and they will put them in like a witness protection. Like when you go in witness protection agency, they'll give you new documents. They'll transfer you. They'll do everything for your protection, but you need to stay in hiding. Now, like I said, this group has been under fire, and I'll tell you why, because they mostly represent the mother. This group, the premise is that most of the fathers, they believe that the mother is right and the father is wrong. I don't know if you've heard this about this group or not.
I've only heard a little bit about it, but you can enlighten us a little bit more.
Okay, so like I said, this group is still around today, but they claim a mother who abducts her child and denies access and denies the father access to a child, the mother who alienates the child, is still quantified and called a protective mother. And the children of the underground will protect her, okay? Now, the children of the underground, they'll provide places to stay to people that are totally bought into that that theory, that the mother has the right to protect the child. Like I said, they're given false travel documents. They're given legal counsel. And I'm going to, I would never mention any names, but I'm going to go so far as to say that there are some high-end lawyers that are willing to, that participate in this because their belief, because of the belief system is there. We've got some high-end people in technology. So you've got people from all walks of life that are organizing and working in the Children of the Underground.
I probably would be one of them people as well, helping out
because
as much as possible.
But here's the deal. Once you go in there, once a mother agrees to go in there with her children and run from the law, they pretty much remain at that point in hiding for quite some time. Mm-hmm. So like I said, they believe that the father is a danger to the child. Like I said, they're female oriented.
Yeah.
They seek to protect the mothers. So this is, like I said, this group has been under fire. But when I had this child missing from my classroom, and someone had kind of told me that this is what happened to this child, you know, I was just glad because it was a devastating situation. If the child had remained in the situation that they were, the child most likely would have perished. So.
Yeah, of course, yeah, that's true as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who should read your book?
Well, you know what? I've got, when I set to read this book, I wanted to write it to empower women because Daniela is a victim of child abuse. She's an empath. And I thought, well, I'm going to, this whole series, because it's the Women of the Willowwood, I want to empower women. I want women to read this, but I have been finding that I have gotten some outstanding reviews. Men are loving it just as well because I think it's a story about compassion, survival, and being strong. So, yeah, I've got some great reviews coming in from men. So it just seems to seem that there's really no the audience has a wide range out there for this book.
Yeah, I should imagine it is a good read as well. But I'm sure everybody will love the book, love the character, and waiting for the next one to come out as well, a follow-up.
I hope so. You know, I've had a few people tell me that if you've ever watched the movie Practical, do you remember the movie Practical Magic with Nicole Kidman? And I don't remember who else was in it.
Yes, I do,
Yeah, there was another actress. And people say it's kind of like in that range. I've had people tell me it's like Charmed, the series that was on TV. It's like the movie The Craft because you've got, you know, when you mess with magic, you know, you've got the good and you've got the bad. So a lot of people are telling me that the book kind of runs parallel to those movies.
Right, yeah. So the story revolves around a highly empathic, sensitive young woman. Would you care to elaborate on her character?
Oh, I would absolutely love to. You know, and I think I've told you this, and if any of my friends are listening or family, I am an empath myself. And, you know, as most teachers, you'll find empaths in so many professions that are caregivers, like doctors and teachers and counselors and, you know, people that deal with people that have services. But our Daniela is a very emotional and sensitive empath, which means if she's got a child in her class that's been abused and is feeling, she has one child that's neglected and is not fed. She has stomach issues. If someone is depressed, she takes on those access, those physical signs. And this is what happens because her body is being depleted in the story. She's been so emotionally empathic because it really happens. Empaths can take on these traits to where your body will break down and you will get ill. It, you know, I've seen it happen. So this is why she learned that she must go to this underground cult, the Women of the Willowwood, and the Curandera for healing, that they're going to help her. They're going to help her heal and channel her abilities so that she can help without being depleted. But like I said, it's a really slippery slope out there because empaths, there's so many different types of empaths, and they're scary empaths. You remember the movie Carrie?
Yes, I do. Oh, I do, yeah.
Remember when she starts fires and, yeah, and a lot of empaths, because we take on so much energy when you release it, because you sometimes we don't release it, we keep it all, we keep everybody's energy. We're sponges. We suck everything in. But when a scary empath gets mad or angry or upset, you're liable to see things like electronics go out, they affect electronics, because they vibrate. An empath's frequency vibrates at a much higher level. They send out vibrational frequencies. And what happens are people that are needy, let's talk about, you know, children maybe that are needy or neglect or anybody that's needy, can pick up on those frequencies. And it's like, okay, I'm picking up on your frequency. I know to go to you because I can use you. It's
yeah.
Like you're like on their playlist. You know what I'm talking about, Bob?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I do know what you're talking about now. Yes,
and,
it happens like
yeah.
that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself in this character?
I bet I do, Bob. You know, but I'm not a scary empath at all by any means. As I said, I am an empath. I'm more of an emotional and sensitive empath. But Danny, who's in the story, she's kind of a mix of, you know, an emotional, an animal empath. We have global empaths. I happen to have a friend who is she's an intense global empath. And global empaths will feel weird and off kilter prior to an earthquake. A hurricane, you know, any geological change. I'm not sure you've heard this before. It will affect their bodies.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, it does. Excuse me a minute. Let's talk about empaths and what can you tell us about them?
Okay, now there are different types of empaths, and what I'm going to say is, you can be a cross between, there's empaths that are mediums. They have the ability to feel like in psychic. They have the ability to know when there's a spirit around. They have this ability. A lot of empaths are healers. They can heal somebody. We have the emotional empath who is able to feel, let's just say that you're feeling depressed. All of a sudden I wake up, and I'm really depressed, but I don't know why. I don't know why I'm depressed. And that is probably one of the biggest things, Bob, that I deal with on a daily basis. There's animal empaths, and I'm not an animal. I wish I was, because I think that's one of the greatest traits ever. The animal empaths have the ability to really hear. They can communicate with animals, and they can feel
yes.
what they're feeling. And I just think, I think that would be, and I think, you know, if we look back at, who was the crocodile hunter? I can't, that was killed. What was his name?
It's gone from my mind now.
I think he was an animal empath. Yeah, I really do, because.
Communicate, yes.
Could,
and I think
yeah.
it'd be a tremendous thing if you could communicate with animals, you know, when they're going to be sick. They will tell you when they're not very well. You can help them, wheel them, and lots of things like that as well.
Oh, I think it'd be a great gift. You know, you wouldn't. You know, I know there's animal psychics, and that, you know, you can even Skype, and they'll say, "Let me see your pet," and they'll tell you what's wrong with them.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I've had somebody on my show what can do that as well.
Mm.
And I will be in touch with him in a couple of months to come back on my show again. It was on last year. Very interesting man as well it was, what he did and with animals and how he could communicate with them. He could speak to them, basically. He said, tell him when they were poorly and when they were, and lots of different things. It's so interesting. And it's true what you're saying about empaths in that way. There's all different sorts of empaths. I think, you know, I'm an empath as well because I do healing. I do send healing out to animals as well, besides my friends or anybody around the world who needs healing.
Oh, that's wonderful. I kind of felt you were. And here's the clincher about empaths. So we, you know, we do try to help, and people always say, well, why can't you say no? You know, you always want to help everybody, and then you're getting hurt either physically or emotionally. We cannot just turn the button off. And if there's empaths out there, they're going to know what I'm talking about, because going way back, Bob, I'm going to go back, we have a soul contract, and I believe that's in our soul contract, that we agree that we're going to come in this lifetime, and we're going to help people. So when people say just turn the button off or say no, they really don't understand. We can't.
That's true. I'll tell you what, you're probably the same as me sometimes. I give healing out many, many times. I do it every night at a certain time. I give healing out to, I have what you call an healing book, and I put everybody's name in it, your name's in it as well. And at a certain time on an evening, usually about 10 o'clock in an evening, my time, I would send healing out to all my friends wherever they are in the world. I have names on a healing tree. I have an healing tree. I put names on there, my healing book, and I send healing out to my Facebook friends as well. But trouble is, sometimes I always forget about myself. Strange, but
yeah.
I think we all do that. And sometimes, if you're not careful, it can drain you. And then you feel absolutely worn out. So sometimes you've got to think about yourself and say, come on, give healing to yourself. And it's like recharging a battery. Because if you don't recharge it, you can't do your work, what you want to do for others in life.
Absolutely.
I think that's the thing we've got to think about in the future.
Yes, and you know, one of the things in the book, because Daniela is such a scary empath, she doesn't know how to control it. She doesn't ground herself. And I don't know, do you ground yourself and do protection for yourself?
Yes, I ground myself as well. If I'm giving any messages out, I always ground myself, always. Wherever you go, even if you're on a paranormal event, you need to ground yourself, and then you don't get bad entities coming in or anything bad like that. Otherwise, because you can, it's so easy to get a bad entity coming in. But if you ground yourself, you don't have no problems at all.
Yeah, and you know, that's so, you're on target about that, because I'll catch myself on guard and won't guard myself, and I'll get migraines, or, you know, I'll just take on whatever the person was ailing. And it's really important. And the big thing that I find is technology. We need to unplug. We need to unplug and get away from technology for a while to get our roots back. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I think we spend too much time. Trouble is, I do it regular as well. I'll look my Facebook page on, and then I'll do something else, and somebody's left me a message to say, I'm not feeling too good, I've split from my boyfriend, or I've split from my girlfriend, can you give me a message? And I think, oh, no, that's all I need at this time. But
yeah.
Stupid me, they'll try and lock in and give me a message, and trouble is, you get involved then, and I think, and then some nights I just think, no, switch it off. Go and sit down.
Yeah.
You don't want to be doing this every night of the week. You've got enough doing shows. Never mind. Don't get me wrong. I like helping people, Lorraine, and you'll probably be the same. You'll help as much people as you can, but sometimes you need to break away from it and relax. Go out and get some fresh air on the seafront.
You
I
do. I'll
way.
Go for it.
Chill out.
Chill out. Yeah, and like I said, we forget to take care of ourselves, and we'll come because, you know, another trait of empaths, and you'll agree to this, and anyone who's listening, is that we are a magnet for and people. People will just come up to us and start telling us our problems. And I used to, you know, this has been happening since I was like in high school, and you know, I used to think, who am I? Like, you know, I'm not a counselor, but empaths have people that are drawn to them with problems. I'm sure you've seen this.
Oh God, many a time. What has helped you, if anything, in your guests with struggling as an eye, empathetic and sensitive?
Yes, okay. And sensitive can feel things. You know, and doesn't just mean that you're sensitive to the environment around you. You know, and any kind of changes, even weather changes, news. A lot of empaths can't watch the news because they take on the negative, too much negative energy.
Yes, it's true that. Yeah, you know for a fact if you go and one of your friends rings you up and says, can you meet for a coffee somewhere? And you go, and as soon as you see, you think, something's wrong.
Absolutely.
Do you? You know, before you sit down, you think, well, she's going to tell me something. Something's gone wrong at home, or something's happened, and you think, well, this is going to be an afternoon. But the trouble is, you listen, and then you give advice.
Yep, because we can't help it. We're sucked in.
We
get sucked in. But, you know, we can't help it. But, you know, like I said, there are healing empaths, you know, and basically the thing, the first step is to, like I said, is to ground yourself so that you don't take on those ailments. I'll take a few minutes to tell the listeners and you a very strange thing. I am not a healing empath, and I'm not a healer. However, about 9 years, my mother was very ill. She had pancreatic cancer, okay, and she had a tumor in her pancreas. And, you know, she was going quickly, and I was over there in Arizona, and I said, you know, Mom, I'm just gonna put my hand on your, you know, where the area is for the pancreas. And then, you know, I did prayers, and, you know, I prayed to Archangel Michael and Raphael and God, and I said, let's just see if we can't take this out of you. And I kind of did a short healing, you know, for her, a session, and she still passed away from her disease. But the really odd thing was, after she passed, it was a year later, I was having tests, and for something else, and on an incidental finding, they found some very small cysts in my pancreas. This is on an incidental finding, have you? And kind of thinking back, knowing what I did, I think probably what happened was when I did that healing to my mom, I had such empathy that I took some of that out and I possibly put some in me, if you can believe that.
Yes, yes, it sometimes happens like that as well, because you're taking everything, trying to take everything away from her, what's hurting her, and unfortunately it's clicked onto you at the same time.
Yeah, it's just, it's absolutely too bizarre. And you know, getting back to empaths, and I think everybody will know that at times we feel really lonely, like there's nobody out there for us, because we're there for everybody. But I think the message is we need to know that the universe is seeking all other empaths out, and we find each other. And I don't, you know, if you find this is true, I have met people that are other empaths, and we seem to support each other, and that is where we get a lot of. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'll tell you what a strange thing happened. It was about a month ago. I was thinking of somebody who wanted lots and lots of healing. They had such a bad time. And I shut my eyes and I was thinking about all this healing I must send out. And I opened my eyes and Jesus was in front of me. I opened my eyes and we stood there. And I had to just think a minute. I thought, well, am I seeing, who is it? And I looked and it was Jesus. And he came to me to tell me that everything will be all right with it, your friend. Believe it or not, my friend was okay.
See?
After all, everything he'd gone through, yeah. And it was just so strange. I couldn't, you know, first time it's ever happened, that is, you know. But I always ask for Joshua to come around me, and sometimes when I think it's sometimes when I'm feeling a bit low on myself, and I always think to myself, there's other people worse than me in life. I've got a roof over my head.
Very true, Bob.
When I want, I do some volunteering work, and when I walk on the seafront, there's an old bloke on there who I've seen in winter. He's got nothing. He has nothing. He sleeps rough all the time, and I've tried to give him some money. He won't accept it. He always says hello. And I saw him again this morning. He's got a push bike and he's got a case. Pushes his bike for so long, stops, goes back and picks his case up, and he's doing that all day long. And I think, you know, but I always try and send him some healing. That poor old boy, I think to myself, I wonder where he sleeps on the night time. I wonder if he's happy. But to me, I think he is happy to wear because he just carries on with life.
Yes, and you know, that's wonderful that you're there, that you have that healing, and that you're able to do that. It is truly a gift, you know. And I always, and people always say, you know, they don't do it. It comes from a higher source, whether you believe it's God or the universe. It's coming. You're just the vessel. You're just the, you know, the channeler that it comes through.
Yes. But it's so nice to try and help people. I'm sure you're the same as well. Whenever you've got time, it's nice to just give a little bit in your time, give a bit of support. I know you do a lot for the school. If they're struggling, you will go in and do some lessons for them. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. But you're there to just give a little bit back to society.
Yes, I am. Yeah, but like I said, we need to ground ourselves and protect ourselves. That's because we are like empaths, or what they call beacons in the night. Your light is out there, and you know we're open. Even negative energies, if we don't protect ourselves, even low-lying negative energies are drawn to us, and you know that to be true.
You know, what you're saying there is, well, I can be walking on the seafront and I get loads of people that just seem to come to me. I don't know why. It can be anybody. Even Mormons can walk on the seafront. I think they're coming towards me and they're smiling before they even get to me. But I will talk to them. I'm not bothered who I talk to. I don't run away because they're Mormons or Christians or anything like that. That doesn't bother me. They just want to talk about God or whatever, and I love talking to anybody. I'll just, you know, because they'll always ask me, what do you think about it? I said, I'm into spiritualism. That's my way of life. I love it. I would never slag you off. You can talk to me. And usually we have a good discussion about things, And he always say, you know, good day, thank you for talking to you, and it's so nice. And I walked on further, and I got stopped by two more different people. But it was nice. And they've even come in shop to give me something. And I thought, well, that's quite nice.
See? Well, let me ask you this, Bob, and if there's any people, empaths that are out there listening. Some people have approached me, or I have been in the company of some people that immediately I can feel nauseous, and I absolutely have to excuse myself, or I will get sick to my. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh yes, I have. Yes, mm-hmm. I have sometimes. I try and make a little excuse, but sometimes it can get too much sometimes. And for instance, there used to be a guy who lived near me, very negative person in life. I tried to help him loads, but all he thinks about is negative, 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 negative. And at one time, it got bad when I used to think, right, I've got to get off now, got to get out. I opened my curtains, and he used to be standing outside my door in the morning, at 7:30. I think, how long he's been there? And because I've only got one exit, I've got some patio doors because it's a chalet. I don't have a back door, so I have to go out that door. And I used to go out, and I think, oh, God, here we go. So I think, right, don't say a lot. I say, now then, John, how are you? And I think, God, you said it again. How are you? And he said, oh, I've had a bad night, and I'm stressed out. And I think, now, I've got to walk with him for 40 minutes in town from where I live. And, you know, very nice lad, but very mixed up in his life. He's gone from one situation to another. But some of it has been his own fault, unfortunately. But since then, he's moved, and he looked a lot better last time I saw him. I think they gave him some medication just to relax him a little bit, and he could talk a lot better, more positive in life. But I thought, right, I'll go and have a talk to him, see how things are. But at one time, it used to just get me down. He'd think, oh, God, I don't need this first thing in the morning. But, you know, sometimes that's what happens in life.
Yeah, you know, as we say, we just can't turn. People say, well, just say no. And my husband gets so angry with me because I don't say no, and I take on things that I shouldn't, and then, you know, I get sick.
You're exactly same as me, Lorraine. You're exactly same as me. I can walk around camp, and there's a few women, well, I'm not saying women or men, they're having problems like I have with my lease and everything.
Right.
And
right.
Suddenly I walk with him and say, don't talk to him, don't talk to him. And he'll know I will stop and say hello. Now, we won't. Come on, let's walk away from him. I say, I can't, Sonny. They just said, hiya, Bob. So I'll go over and politely and say, now then, Jean, how are you? And I'll just say, look, I've got to get off. I've got to see somebody else around camp. Now, Sonny would have walked straight past them and gone. And sometimes I would think that was rude to do that. I know your husband will say, you're at it again, you're talking and you're trying to help people when you should say no. Is that true?
Right. Yeah, but like I said, you know, I'm going to say this again. Sometimes we can't because we have this soul contract that, okay, we're supposed to help these people. And you know, even if it means that it's going to deplete us, we're there in to help them in their life for a reason. Now, getting back to empaths, and I'm going to see if anybody can relate to this. When I was a child, let's go back to, and this is another big mystery. A lot of empaths have out-of-body experiences. And, I learned recently why, but when I was, and I vividly remember I was about 9 or 10 years old. My first out-of-body experience was in school. I was sitting in the classroom, and I could see my body left, and I went to the back of the room. I could see myself sitting in my seat. I'm gonna, for a 9-year-old, I was hysterical. I immediately, you know, I my face got white. I probably almost wanted to pass out. But then after I merged back with my body, I had told the teacher, I said, I'm sick. I'm going to go see the nurse. So, you know, I saw the nurse. And then from that day, these episodes span till I was, I'm going to say, in college, maybe 19. And they took on different aspects. When I would have an out-of-body experience, time would be real slow, almost like you're missing time. I mean, I wouldn't pass out. The time would drag on. It was almost like I was being removed from this realm to the next. Have you ever had experiences like that, Bob?
Yeah. And did you feel yourself clip back into your body?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
it still happens to me.
Carry
on, Lorraine.
Man, this is awake time, you know, and as a teenager, it got to be quite distressing. And, you know, my mother took me to all these doctors, neurologists, and you know, they did CT scans, and they didn't know what this was. You know, we're talking back in the 60s, doctors didn't know about out-of-body experience. So what did they do?
That's true.
Oh, nervous. They put me on, I was 16 years old, they put me on tranquilizers.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Because that understanding wasn't there, and they just poo-pooed everything off as nerves. So up until, I'd probably say, my last year of college, and then I kind of weaned myself off of them. But, you know, it's just crazy, you know, that, like I said, some doctors know now, and psychologists and you know, parapsychologists know about out-of-body experiences, but they diagnosed me as just having anxiety. So there you go.
It will happen again to you, though.
You know, it hasn't in a long time. I haven't had, I know when it's coming on because I get that feeling. So a year ago, I found out why those were happening and why they happened to empaths. And why they happened to empaths is because you're physically removed. And this is the universe's way of removing your higher self from a toxic situation. And, you know, looking back, I think, okay, that's why it happened. It just kind of made sense then, you know?
Yes. Told me it will happen again to you, but you'll get so used to it going out of your body and coming back in again. It'd be just like it won't be a big thing these days to you.
And I think now that I know what it is, but, you know, being a child that day, sitting in that classroom, I had no idea I thought I was dying. I mean, you know, you just don't know why this is happening.
Definitely. It would feel strange to you then. And I bet you thought, oh, God, you know, like you say, you thought you were dying, you were passing out or doing something, and you think, God, I'm over there, but I'm here. How's that?
Yeah.
How can that be?
Yeah, and another thing with empaths, and too, as a child, fluorescent lighting. I remember going into stores, like shopping centers and stores with, you know, and the old fluorescent lighting that they used was really bad. It's I don't even know if they use it anymore, but the minute I would get into a mall or a shopping center that had the fluorescent lighting, boom, I would get that sensation again, like I was going to have an out-of-body experience. And I would leave. So I don't know if you can relate to that or not.
Yeah, I think it is a bit strange. And they don't use a lot of fluorescent lighting now as such.
No, they don't.
I think they've realized that a lot of people, it's happened to a lot of people, and I think there's been a lot of strange happenings that way as well. And I think they've done away with all that now, thank goodness.
They have.
Because I think
it has caused
epilepsy as well.
It does. It does. And, you know, that's one of the reasons they had them in schools, but they're removing them because of that. Exactly.
And, going back to empath as well, like, everything you're telling us tonight and about the listeners is so true with everything about being an empath.
It is, and you know, I'm also going to touch on, because I'm an author, and you too, we do a lot of, anytime you work with social media, you know, and you're on Twitter and you're on LinkedIn and you're on Facebook,
yes.
You're dealing with people, and you know, there's a lot of negativity going around, and we tend to take on that too, and we also have to limit our time that we are on social media. There is a profound effect on our bodies.
Yeah, and trouble is, you could be on it every day, every hour of the day. If somebody starts to talk to you and somebody else, I could be talking to somebody on Facebook and somebody else will come on. I've had three people talking, and I think,
yeah.
Shut it down. Come away. Just say, I'm sorry,
yeah.
I'm busy at the moment. I'll talk to you when I've got a little bit of time. I don't mind then. One-to-one talking is all right. When you've got three people all wanting a word, and if you don't reply back, they think you're ignoring them.
And they get mad. Exactly. Exactly. They get mad. They're like, well, why didn't you respond to me? You know, so basically, you know, we have to look out for ourselves, because if we don't, then we're going to be not good for ourselves or to anybody for that matter.
Yes, and especially because I live on my own. You know, I've got nobody around me at the moment to say, I wonder where Bob is today. Why didn't he come in? I know they
exactly.
can ring me, but I could be passed out or could be something serious wrong with
yeah.
me. And if my next
yeah.
door neighbour, they're probably a day, maybe 2 days, somebody would come looking for me. Good job. But my next door neighbour's got a key. I give him a key just in case anything like that did happen. And I've got a key to get in his place. So I think that way, like you say, we need time for ourselves.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And I, the reason I can vouch from that is because when I was on a cruise, I was on vacation, gosh, a few years ago. 2 years ago, and I didn't do Wi-Fi on the ship, and for that whole week, I totally recharged my batteries, and it was healthy for me.
Yes, it will do. So I know I'm going to have my operation a week on Tuesday, but if I can't do my show on that Wednesday, I will get my friend Vanda to do my show. I'm not going to rush back and think, God, I've got my show tonight, I must do it. I will see how I feel straight away after the operation on Tuesday, and if I'm not well enough, I will be in touch with Vanda to be on standby.
Yes, take the time
it's
for
no
yourself.
Use struggling and panicking, thinking, oh, God, I've got to get back, and thinking, let me get out of this hospital. I don't want to be doing that. If I'm not well on the Tuesday to come home, I want to be able to think, right, I'm coming home on Wednesday. I haven't got my show to do tonight. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
good.
And
right,
we're
nearly running out of time. It's gone. The hour's so gone so quickly. Can you let everybody know where they can find you and be in touch with you?
Absolutely. If everybody just goes to my website, at www.lorraine carey.com. There's a contact page, and they can reach me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. All the information is there, and then they can see the books. And like I said, if you like that type of thing, like charms, the craft, practical magic, I think you're going to like The Good Teacher. And, you know,
Where can they purchase your book?
On Amazon. It's strictly on Amazon. It's in print, and it's available on Kindle. It's exclusive. It's with Kindle Unlimited. So it's on Amazon.
Right. That's wonderful. I'm sure it's going to be a success, as always, with your books. They're so beautiful. It's good read your books are, and I'm so happy that you've got this new one out and you're going to do follow-up. So it'd be a series, or maybe one, three or four books, or maybe five. I suppose you don't know until you start going.
You know, and I always say it's going to go where it goes, where it's supposed to go. If it, you know, if there's more to be told, then there's going to be more. But actually, I'm working on book two right now, Women of the Willowwood. And, you know, Dani in the first book, she'll go undercover. She's going to have to do a name change and change her identity, because she's going to go on to be a soul rescuer. So she's not going to the Children of the Underground. She's going to join the Women of the Willowwood. And the journey continues.
Oh, wonderful. It'd be nice if some of them, once you've done it all, is to make it into a film. Would be absolutely ace.
Oh, that would be my dream, Bob. That would absolutely, that would be a dream come true.
Well, you never know in life, you know.
No, you never.
Somebody might pick it up and think, "By, this is a good book, is this?" And second book and third book and fourth book, and think, "By, this could be a series, a TV series."
Oh, that would be absolutely. I did have a book. I wrote a book 3 years ago called Jonathan Blockett, and I entered it. It was a finalist in the Windance Film Festival, and it was 1 out of 10 that they were considering to make a film. And I thought, oh, this will be wonderful. But, you know, it was a finalist, which I am thrilled that it made the finalist, but it didn't win. But that was just a big, big perk for me, you know.
Time's on your round. And I'm sure, one day they will make them into a film. And it will hopefully be a series. Yes,
that's great, Pat.
It would be.
I love your energy. I know every time we talk, I can feel that great energy that you have. So you keep going at it. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I'm sure when book two comes out, we'll have you back on the show again.
And I would love to come back. So thank you very much, Bob, and blessings with your healing. Let me know how it's going, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Oh, thank you. I'll be posting on Facebook when I go in. And, and when I get back home, I'll post on Facebook about how am I doing, and how the operation went. So I'll let all my friends know how I'm going on.
Because we care about you, Bob. You do that. And again,
thank you.
And
I thank everybody for all the love and support.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to everybody, and thank you, Bob. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, thank you, and have a lovely weekend.
You too, Bob. Blessings.
Thank you. Bye.
Now, bye-bye.
Bye.